Studio 360.
I'm Kurt Anderson, and I am joined now by Gary Marcus. Gary is a psychology professor and director of the Center for Language and Music at New York University, as well as the author of several books, including Guitar Zero, which is an account of how he learned to play the guitar late in life. Relatively late, I guess I should say, since you're only in your 40s now. Gary, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, as we heard, creativity is a difficult thing to measure, and creative aptitude, although people try. Why is it? Is it just a definitional problem, or is it deeper?
There are a lot of different elements to creativity. Some of them are internal, like how well can you look at a certain puzzle and give me five different answers to it? And some of it has to do with how well you know the history of the genre that you're working within. So if you're in music, how well do you know jazz if you're playing jazz? And there's opportunity and circumstance. And so when you have a measure that tries to capture creativity, it's not necessarily going to do a great job of predicting how well an actual person is in a real scenario.
Right. Yeah. As you say, if you're going to be a writer, you need to have read and know what's done, or music, same thing. But presumably there is some version of an aptitude of being able to connect these dots in surprising ways that a test could theoretically measure.
Well,
not this test, I don't know.
It might actually be many aptitudes. So you can have a test that's trying to get the sort of one true measure of creativity. It's the same thing with intelligence. I don't think there's a single box in the head that is intelligence. People have gone and looked for it. You know, does it live in the prefrontal cortex? Or is it the speed at which we can solve equations or something like that? And nobody's ever found the one perfect measure of intelligence. There are a lot of things that are intercorrelated, and I think that's because there are lots of sub-abilities that go into intelligence, and the test are tapping into a kind of conglomeration of those.
So IQ scores mean something, even if they're not perfect measurements of intelligence. Similarly, you think these Torrance tests may mean something?
Yeah, they correlate somewhat with actual achievement. It's sort of like looking at someone, measuring their height and saying, are they going to be a good basketball player? Well, on average, you know, the taller people are the better basketball players, but it's only an average.
Right.
It's a pretty indirect measure.
Right. Does that lead you to think that this is just an imperfect measurement of it and that we could measure it better, or should we just give up on those kinds of fill in the bubble aptitude tests when it comes to creativity or intelligence?
Definitely, you don't want to have people just fill in the bubble if you want to measure creativity. You want to look at the things where people are drawing outside the lines. And the second thing is, even if you do it, I think you have to have realistic expectations. Because there's not a single unified box in the head that is creativity, and because so many things enter in, like cultural knowledge and the zeitgeist of the moment and so forth, it's probably not realistic to expect that any test is going to be a perfect measure of creativity.
And now that we are in the age of direct observation of how the brain works and maybe how the mind works, are these kinds of tests going to be a thing of the past in your lifetime, if not mine?
I don't think that the brain is going to replace them. I'm not sure how much value there is in the test in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
There's no place that I know where the brain is really a better test than a cognitive test or than a behavioral test. So we aren't to the point where we can really look at the structures of your brain and say, you know, you're going to be a creative person. We can find that on average, there are going to be slight differences between the creative people and the less creative people. But the brain measures are pretty indirect. There's a lot of noise. You can think of them as sort of like how many megapixels are the images, and there are not a lot of pixels in those images, and we don't know a lot about the brain structures underlying them. So we're not in a position where we can predict exactly how violent someone's going to be or how smart they're going to be or any of those things. People love the pictures, but they really should be taken with a grain of salt.
Now, you were a tenured professor and a well-established scientist when you started playing the guitar a few years ago. Had you always thought of yourself as a creative person?
I never particularly thought of myself as a creative person. I think that creativity takes on different forms. I think I'm creative as a writer and as a scientist, but not as an artist or as a musician. I've tried to develop some creativity, so I compose music for myself. I don't foist it upon the world, and I would say I have some aptitude for it.
Well, you make an interesting point embedded in there, which is that creativity is so routinely and reflexively equated with work in the arts, as opposed to in science. You know, it's creative people go perform and write and make pictures, and uncreative people go do accounting or whatever.
That's right. I mean, there's a lot of creativity involved in science, and I think I've developed the skills to do that kind of creativity. The kind of creativity in arts is a different kind of thing. There's some relation in both cases. Excuse me. I think you want to try to move outside what other people have done. You want to see what's original. You want to have an understanding of a history. And I think I have that kind of creativity. But there's a kind of creativity that's looking at a physical object and seeing a different way to draw it, that there's a different skill and one that I haven't cultivated.
So to the degree that creativity is about solving a problem, it's your problems are different than a painter's problems.
That's right.
And when you're hiring people for your lab, graduate students or whomever, do you try to suss out the degree to which they are or aren't scientifically creative?
I do to some extent. I think the thing I care about most is, are they troubleshooters? Are they problem solvers? So in the real world of science, nothing ever goes as planned. And you want people that not only realize that something didn't go right, but try to sit there and figure out how to fix it. And that's probably true in creativity, too. You know, you try out a chord structure, it doesn't quite work. And either you sit there and you kind of look at it, or you say, how can I make this better?
So you're a creative scientist, and you can play the guitar and compose some music. Do you have a sense in your own life or from the literature or research you have done or know about that creative ability is fungible from one realm to another?
I think it is in part and in part not. So some of creativity involves knowing the conventions of a particular domain, so knowing the rules of good writing and knowing when to break them. And some of creativity is just having the guts to break the rules. So the part that's sort of a personality trait, for example, about having the guts to break the rules, that probably is fungible across different domains. And the part that's about knowing how this thing works or knowing how to, you know, tightly plot a suspenseful script, you know, that's specific knowledge, and that's not necessarily going to help you make a song.
So there's a certain kind of risk-taking impulse and I guess, or courage, I guess, to color outside the lines.
I think definitely.
A big focus of your research is language acquisition, how babies and little kids learn to speak. Some creative people have more facility with language than others, professional storytellers or writers or lyricists. Is something different going on in the mind of a Jay-Z or Cole Porter, do you think?
It's a great question, and I think it's hard to answer. I don't think we have the brain imaging technology to really identify what's going on, and I suspect that the answer would be, when you look at different people who are lyricists, that they actually have different things they bring to the table. So Dylan is very good with these kind of images. David Byrne, it's more about the rhythms than it is about the images.
Right.
The people that are good at rhymes, that might be a fine enough ability that we could nail that one down and say, this is how the brain gets good at rhymes and this is what's going on for these people doing the rhymes. The part where you connect something to an image that nobody's thought of before, I bet that's harder to pin
right.
down.
Gary Marcus is the director of the Center for Language and Music at New York University, and we'll keep talking later in the hour. We'll see if we can't pin down what's happening inside of a few creative minds.
Your head is in a cradle, a cage actually, and you're pretty crammed in there, but he's got a double mirror, so as you're laying on your back, you're seeing the keyboard laying on your knees.
Piano playing guinea pigs. That's ahead in Studio 360 from Public Radio International in association with Slate.